Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show.
You're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show, number one in Nippleburn since June 2005.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
Don't take that Link It Up official there, Pat. He doesn't need anything coming in the back.
Got a full house tonight.
Stop touching me.
It's a full house. Stop touching me.
I tell you, man, this headphone tree, all I hear is it statics out, it goes, and I get reverbs in the ear, and then it cuts.
Why are we still using that thing? Let's hook up this thing again.
Because when we use the amplified headphone tree, then it all sounds great to us and sounds like shit to everybody else.
Well, I think we're past that finally.
You'd be surprised.
Hopefully.
I'm glad you think so.
Episode 95.
Jam-packed show tonight.
And yes, as Pat said, we are an hour and a half, but we only have an actual half hour of good content.
That's
two shows.
Hour and a half, but we have a good half
10
hour
minutes
content.
Worth of good stuff.
Yeah. It depends on whether you're one of those buttheads that, you know, insist that we talk about only Linux on
Linux
the tech
only
show.
Linux. Yeah.
Or you just like, the whole playful banter and technology kind of stuff.
Sometimes we get off topic, man, but what the hell?
95. Gentlemen, 95
five to go.
Shows.
Five more, and then it's
what
the
are we
going to
do
show.
For? What are we going to do
all
for 100?
The all porn show.
I'm trying to line up a very special guest.
Good luck.
Show 100.
Should we play that comment and get it out of the way?
Play it. Why not?
Play it. Here's a comment.
I'll record this audio.
Turn it up.
This is being recorded with Audacity on top of Linux, specifically Ubuntu Ori.
Sorry.
Real quick, no, I...
What'd you call me?
Not quite sure why, but you have to kill ESD in order to get this thing to record.
He didn't set it for
really
ESD.
Something that I don't think you should have to do. Don't know why this is, but that's what I discovered on the Audacity website. It would sure be nice if they can get this thing to work without having to do anything to ESD or, for that matter, ArchD. But, oh well, but at least it works, you know, at least as if we get to work and kick off ESD. Anyway, hey guys, thanks for having the show every night, and we'll catch you on the stream.
Yeah!
What's that?
Joel.
Joel from?
Yeah, he brings up a really good point.
Joel.
And
he does, and I've had problems with that shitty stuff too. Ubuntu. Audio.
ESD is not, and ARTS are not the lone culprit. You also have some audio applications that are coded strictly for OS.
ESD, ArtsD does that too.
Well, that's what I mean. ARTS, ESD. There's some applications that are coded for OSS.
Skype is like that.
That unless you have OSS support with all, if you're using ALSA and you don't have OSS
support,
they're not going to work. It would be nice. Yeah, it's true. It would be nice if they could get this all together and working, because you're right. When ARTS or ESD takes a hold of your audio devices, if the application makes a call for that specific device, and ESD has it, it's not going to give it up. They actually have to know how to play nicely with ESD or ARTS. And I thought Audacity had that capability, but maybe I'm wrong. Let me fire it up on this end right now.
Audacity?
Yeah. Under preferences, device dev. Yeah. Well, actually, their device audio input-output is dev DSP, so it seems like they're still using OSS as opposed to any of the newer technologies.
I thought also was supposed to unite everything under one umbrella.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Under the umbrella of shit.
I like ALSA.
it's
complicated.
It's improving slowly.
Yes, it is improving. It's it's much less shit than it used to be.
Yeah, I agree.
But, you know, that is another good area for people transitioning from other operating systems over to Linux. You see that all the time. Why do they set the ALSA mixer by default to be muted and you can't hear any sound? And that's
very annoying.
You know, you go to the Ubuntu forums or you go to linuxquestions.org.
Sound doesn't work.
Under Ubuntu, and it's just loaded. Every week somebody posts about sound, and then you got to say, well, did you check ALSA mixer and make sure it was
unmuted?
Yeah, but I tell you what, if you actually would look around, the same thing. You look through the forums or you look on, you know, Google or something like that, and the first thing you find every time, the first answer anybody gives is, did you check your, to make sure that you weren't muted? And in ALSA's defense, even though I really dislike ALSA, their how-to fact, their install fact, does mention how to fix that right off the bat, too.
Frank, let me ask you, do you hate ALSA more or CUPS more?
CUPS.
I like CUPS.
I hate CUPS.
I like
CUPS.
CUPS
is the bane of printing existence, I'm telling you.
I have no problem using CUPS.
I'm not talking about the kind you stick in your jockstrap, mind you. I'm talking about the what they call common Unix printing system, common Unix piece of shit or something like that.
I guess the experience
common
Unix varies.
Piece of shit system.
Yeah, depending on the printer you're using, I guess.
I don't know. Well, you know, I tell you, CUPS is getting a little bit better, too. But there are some... what the hell was it then? See, now, the first time I ever used CUPS, I used it on a Yellow Dog system, and it worked, like, flawlessly. You know what I mean? Exactly the way it was supposed to. You went in and picked the thing, and you know, everything popped up and started working, and it was all happy. The next time I tried to use it was on a Slackware system.
Maybe that's the problem.
Dude, it was not happy about that at all. And I have successfully used it a couple of times on Ubuntu as well.
I've used it on Debian and Fedora, and they work fine in both.
So I haven't done anything with Fedora. And my Debian, I have some Debian machines, but they don't print anywhere, you know. And if they did, I probably would use AppsFilter because they don't have a GUI interface kind of thing. You know, they're just servers. So,
everything. Everything in this room is.
Good thing it's not on your lap, otherwise you become sterilized.
Yeah. No way. But you know, I like the other Unix printing systems.
LPR.
Much better. Much better. But hey, you know, I wanted to make a comment on something. I would.
That's my comment.
As
Dan's farting.
Dan, takes care of that for me. I would like all of you guys and all of our listeners to do me a big favor, and that is please write your senator and your congressman, okay, and demand that they put me, Link Fessenden, in charge of the National Space Program. Okay? Now I'm going to tell you why. Because I... Exactly. That's why.
I've never grown before.
That wasn't supposed to be the long one.
The reason why... Yeah, exactly. No, I could do it, right?
Senator Fez.
The reason that I should be in charge is because I'm not stupid. Okay? Number one, I'm not stupid. Number two, I'll charge... I guarantee you, I will save the country money. I'll charge way, way less money to do this job than anybody else ever has.
I would fire the whole NASA crew and get Burt Rutan and his crew.
That's now you're talking. Now, here's the deal, right? And this has been really weighing on me lately, and it just kind of came to a head today when I saw another news article. The news article I saw today said that they had to have a space mission, a spacewalk, so that they could pull
a piece of
hazardous fabric from the space shuttle. Hazardous. Hazardous fabric. What the hell are they... hazardous fabric? Okay. This is also the space shuttle that has a problem exploding when it is hit by... Dun, dun, dun,
piece of foam.
Styrofoam. All right. Now, This is 2005.
It's hit with styrofoam at several hundred miles an hour.
You know what? It's styrofoam. If I hit styrofoam at several hundred miles an hour with my car would still keep going. The space shuttle, however, blows up and takes out astronauts. Right.
Well,
now they have problems with hazardous fabric. But now, what's next? Are they going to have a red alert? Like, oh my God, quick evasive maneuvers! I see a pocket lint as we're coming into the atmosphere. Right.
Yeah, but that fabric that they took off has been hanging off the shuttle on almost every single flight it's ever done.
So why
this is the first time they've actually ever looked underneath the shuttle while it was in orbit?
So
see what it looks
why
like.
Now is it like a hazardous and life-threatening piece of fabric?
They have to prove that they could fix it if it was a problem.
Yeah. Wow.
So this was their excuse to go out and fix something, because pretty much nothing else, they couldn't find anything else wrong.
But see, here's
I think this was the easiest thing they could get.
Here's the thing, okay? We are supposed to be like the leader in space technology in the world. There's no reason why we shouldn't be.
I agree there.
There's no reason why we shouldn't be. The scary part is, like, even if we are still the leader, we have two really close seconds, and that's the Chinese, who are just developing their stuff, and the Russians, who, like, are hardly even a country anymore. I'm not talking like the USSR. No, that's done with. I'm talking the Russians, okay? The Russians, who have a collective country of the size of my hometown, right?
Secret Soviet space disasters.
Right.
Did you see that? That's
some really, really scary stuff. And the second that, we have had corporations now that have actually built space vehicles, okay? Hardy, working, space-going vehicles. And we in the United States, with our government-funded program, are still riding around on the space internet in what appears to be a Commodore 64.
That's a good analogy.
Come on, guys. Let's
There isn't that much more computing power in there.
Let's get with the program a little bit. You know what? If we have all this technology now, we're not using any of it on the space shuttle. And we also have problems with the space shuttle, like, now stuff is breaking down. They can't even find it anymore. Don't know why. And it blows up when you hit it with styrofoam or lint. Come on.
They lost the source code. They only have the binary sitting around.
Something is just wrong with that, and we need to get it fixed. And to that end, my resolve is that I should be director of NASA, and you all should help me out. I promise I'll do a better job. Anyway, that's my rant for today. I just, that kind of pissed me off the whole...
I think the basis of the problem, Link,
pocket lint problem.
It's a government agency.
Yeah, but you know what? It's got to be a government agency, because if you privatize it, it just wouldn't be the same. But what the government needs to do is take a whole lot of examples from, the private space flight programs. And, other government space flight programs, too.
They got to have the Linux mentality.
I know they're sucking some technology from the Russians, but the Russians really aren't doing much with it anymore.
You got to do more with less.
They really should be hooking up with the Chinese or something. But anyway, that's my rant.
Okay. I have a two-minute rant.
That's it.
The Link Air and Space Association?
Yes. LASA or something.
LASA.
I went to go check out that laptop, HP laptop advertised at Circuit City for $650.
Yeah, I saw that on your blog.
Yeah, I brought a whole bunch of bootable CDs, and it booted up. The video was working, no sound, and the network card wasn't working, the wireless card. So.
And he bought it anyway.
No. I'm not stupid.
Oh, wait, I thought your blog said you bought it.
Yes, you
I didn't buy it.
No. Oh, I thought your blog said... Because I read your blog, and I'm like... Last post, he said it didn't work, but then why did he buy it?
I didn't buy it.
I thought you did buy it.
I heard that the wireless card works if you use the NDS wrapper with the Windows driver.
Okay.
But the audio was dead in the water, not even recognized by any of them.
All right, now here's a question for you. Now, I read this in your blog, right? And I'm thinking, and it's a smart thing. You went and checked it out, and it was $650 or something like that, right?
Yeah, $650, which is a good price for
what they were giving you. Yeah, that's a good price. For what speed? Was it gigahertz or something like that?
It was a 1.6 Celeron mobile. It was a Semperon, I'm sorry, AMD Semperon.
Since that didn't work out, have you thought about trying like one of the Linux-based laptops, either from Like they have some vendors available
Walmart.
On the net now, or Walmart or
Sub 300. Like yeah, I'm thinking about it.
To see what they're like.
If you don't go to Walmart route, then you go to the next route. They're like over $1,000.
No, I see.
Right.
The Walmart thing.
Right.
I've heard about some people.
There's a big difference. There's like a huge gap from like $500, $600 to like up to over $1,000.
Yeah.
For a Linux laptop.
Well, I've heard some people actually trying to get that the Walmart laptop thing and like don't have a whole lot of luck actually getting it.
Getting it, really?
That's ordering it online from Walmart. But by the same token, I thought I heard a couple of people that actually went to Sam's Club.
And they had them
and
there?
Just bought it. Yeah.
Really?
I could be wrong. You know, if anybody out there knows, if they've seen actual, like, one of those Walmart laptop
$550
things
ones?
In a Sam's Club or in a Walmart actually on a shelf or something, you know, drop us a line and let us
well,
know.
Be why did they have that. A problem getting it?
I guess they're, like, back-ordered or something.
The Sub 300 website, which is this Canadian company that has them, they have a whole bunch of different models. And the cheapest one they had was, like, they had a cheapy one for, like, $500, $600.
That's not under 300, isn't that what sub 300?
No, the desktop's sub 300.
Oh, yeah.
But the one that I was interested in was this 1 gigahertz machine that like sold like 6 months ago for like $800, and it was a pretty well loaded machine.
Uh-huh.
But they were out of stock recently. I checked at the website. They redesigned the website, and the same machine that was going for like $800 is now going for like $950 for no reason whatsoever.
Well, yeah, there's a reason behind it. They want to make another $150 off your ass. That's what it is.
So there's other companies that have them. One option I'm thinking about doing is maybe getting a bare-bones laptop. There's a couple of websites that you can get bare-bones systems with no operating system or nothing and just put it together. So I'm thinking about doing that route. I'm going to wait and see. No rush.
Laptops suck.
They do, man.
No matter how you go about it, they always... It's like you get a laptop... And you never get exactly what you like. Like, you could build a PC and get exactly what you want. But, you know, with a laptop, you always got to, you know, something always sucks in a laptop.
Yep. My best advice is to go out and buy yourself a nice used Dell that's in good condition.
I don't want a freaking Dell, man. I had Dells before. They're okay, but...
Hey, that's what I'm using. It works.
And the thing weighs a ton, too.
Yeah, they're bricks.
Well, it's because mine's a little old.
When
it's
you're done with it, you can build a house.
Megahertz, but...
Use it as a doorstop.
What kind you got there?
As a boat anchor.
I have a Sony Vaio.
Sony Vaio. His laptop
a crash
works
test
just fine.
Now,
except for he's got to keep the Windows.
The bare bones systems, the website that has the bare bone boxes, a lot of the laptops they sell are Sony's, are Dell's.
Uh-huh.
We're all different companies. Toshiba's. You got to read to see where the manufacturer is, which one it is. A lot of them are the same exact models that these other companies sell.
Oh, I know.
You know,
I got open.
So if anyone's gone the bare bones route with, you know,
I have sweat rolling out of my ears.
I'd be interested.
It rolls out of the ear cups after a while.
No, it's rolling out of my ears from the headphones.
Pat's
you know?
Trying to ask a question and you're just barreling right over top.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm making one of them.
You want me to put an ice cube in
there? One of them terrible comments that everybody
I'm blowing
hates
your ear,
we talk about. Yeah, I bet you would blow my ear, Pat.
Stick your tongue in his ear.
Oh, no,
you
thanks.
Pervert, you.
We'll get Curly to come up here and pee in
your ear. That'd be the whole enchilada right there. Pat blown in my ear, and Dan giving me the eye down, and Alan's over here rubbing my knee.
All right, let's stop right here. Enough. I'm cutting you off.
Yeah, next thing will happen, Link will be up in the air like that chick.
Jesus. I'm cutting you guys off. That's it.
You better have some big muscles, man, because I think I have a little bit harder to lift them fling around in
the problem is there's going to be no hair to grab a hold of. You know? Right. You can't pull his head back.
He got his forehead raised this week.
Just sick, man. Just sick.
So what do you want to do? You want to talk to our guest? Or?
No, yeah, it's not time yet, is it?
Yeah, it is. We got 3 minutes.
He said he's not going to be here until after, a little after now. We got to call him.
No, but he said call like 15 minutes before.
Well, it's 10 minutes to make sure.
You know,
so
I want
to
run
we can
downstairs.
Start calling
you
got, now.
You want something to drink? Anybody
sure.
I'm dying of thirst. What do you want? We got Diet Coke, Diet Cherry Coke.
Or sure, whatever, something.
Diet, whatever.
Because it's something hot, something.
All right, talk about something while I'm going.
Something
words. Back to the laptops. If anyone had bought one of these bare bone kits and put together their own machine, I'd be really interested to know how you did it. And, you know, if there's any chinks in the road, you know, anything you got to look out for.
No problem.
Any chinks in the road. Oh, yeah, how you doing?
Hey, listen.
You watch out, you don't run over me. Kinks. Kinks in the road. Kinks would have been better.
Chinks in the armor.
And he cheeks in the room. Oh, you look out!
So I'm saving my pennies for a laptop. I actually sold one of my TV cards to Alan.
That's not funny.
That's not funny.
He bought one of my hot pot cards. So Alan, you're gonna do.
So what are you gonna do with two? You got two.
TV
cards right now.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna use this one because this one encodes on the fly.
It's the Hopog WinTV 350.
As opposed to having to do all my encoding with the box I'm using, so
okay,
it should be a little bit better.
It will be better.
Oh, no, we do have beer for this show. And if people are asking on the IRC chat, for those of you who are listening later and can't be bothered to join us when it's more fun, people on the IRC chat are asking if we have any beer tonight.
The beer
and yes,
for
the
we
do.
Is.
The beer for the night has already been drunk, and it was pretty good, actually, and it's Weyerbacher Prophecy Ale, a prophecy ale aged in oak barrels. Very, very interesting.
Preferred
stuff.
Brew of Nostradamus.
Yeah, Weyerbacher kicks ass, man. It's a local Eastern brewery.
It's almost like
put
this hint of what?
Put the can on your nipple.
Put the can on my nipple. No thanks.
You guys are scaring me tonight. Let me just say that right now.
The next
you started
comes out
it,
of past
Pat.
Office, you guys are scaring the clothes right off of me.
Woo!
Then the music starts.
Now you know why Dan keeps it so damn hot up here. He wants you to start stripping down as you come in the door. I have my pants on tonight, and they're staying on, damn it, till I get home. And then I'll hook him up with the webcam.
Do you want to give him a call?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean on the other phone right there, just Pat can give him a ring. That I could touch.
Yeah, Pat, ring him.
Touch on an issue that was brought up last week.
Ring him, ring him, ring him, ring him, ring him. By the way, for those of you who do not know, we're announcing him, right? Yeah, because we're going to put for those of you who do not know, we have a very special guest tonight, and it is...
Nancy Reagan.
Dun, 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 dun.
Just say no.
ESR.
TSR, the company that brought us Dungeons & Dragons.
Eric, right,
fanfare.
Yes.
Okay.
Raymond.
Last week I had Raymond brought up the question as to why, if it's so easy, when Apple moves to the Intel processors, it's going to be so easy to just port the applications over to the Intel architecture. Why can't they do that in Linux?
What's it, porking application?
Porking the applications. But, you know, and what I failed to realize was the fact that these applications are already written for the Apple API, for the Apple, for Aqua, Cocoa, whatever. They're already written. All it is just recompiling it for the processor and
architecture
that is on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not thinking. Which then brings up to the next question. If that is so simple to be able to do that, because you're just moving architectures, why aren't companies like Macromedia at least just compiling Flash Player for PPC architecture on Linux? It can't be that much harder. All they got to do is just run make from a PPC machine. Run make.
Well, there's, you know, there's more to it than that, I'm sure. Sometimes
I don't think
something.
So. I think there's something else going on there.
Something to
that's just me.
It's a conspiracy. Everybody, whip out your tin foil. Place it gently around your head.
And squeeze.
Here is Dan's conspiracy.
Our guest is waiting for a call.
Oh, outstanding. Well, we should call him then.
Yeah, but the problem is now
I had a feeling.
Oh, here it is.
Mr. Raymond has a lot to say.
I hope he does, because I'm out of cop.
Yeah, because we're pretty much shot.
Are we calling the... Not the cell, right?
The landline.
Okay. Now, here we go. Ah!
Man, maybe pretty revolting tonight.
Oh, wait. No, that's my own phone.
That's all right. It's show 95, right?
There we go.
Ugh.
Ouch.
And I forgot the phone number.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? The phone number's off the screen.
Oh.
It's the first one.
La, 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 la.
Maybe we should be, like, commenting on her.
Yeah, muting out the tones.
Yeah, let me do that. Hold on. I'm going to forget to turn the mute back off.
Yeah. Are we all muted?
Could suck.
No. I hope that's
you know what?
Is that right?
All of a sudden, I can't hear myself either, kind of, sort of. Hello?
Unmute us.
Yeah. It's still on.
Can hardly hear.
Hello?
I don't hear it.
Are you happy now?
That's much better, yes, actually.
Hello?
I think that's the right number, right? I should have written it down. What is wrong with me? I didn't even realize I had the number until
I'm trying to get into my email
into
now, and I will tell you what it is.
No, I have it. I have it. I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yeah, do it.
Do it.
Do it.
I hope this works well.
I hope so, too.
Hello?
Eric!
Yes?
It's Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. How are you?
I'm fine, but you are a little distorted.
Oh, well, a lot of people say that about me, actually.
So. Your voice is a little distorted.
We'll try to adjust this.
We're going to try and adjust it as we go along.
Okay.
Is that better?
Is that better?
Yes, it is.
Great.
Yay, Alan.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Eric. It's a big honor to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. So what's on your mind this evening?
Anything and everything. We wanted to, you know, we haven't had really a chance to actually ever talk with you on the show or off the show yet. And I know that, you know, we all used to listen to you when you were on the Linux show. And we figured it'd be great, you know, to have you on and have you talk about, you know, current events in Linux and your take on things and, you know, all of that happy stuff.
Well, where would you like to start?
How about desktop Linux?
There's been
a lot of comments and opinions floating around about, is Linux ready for the general user desktop? And a lot of complaints brought up or points that Linux needs to improve on. I've been thinking a lot of this stuff. You know, it does make sense, but it also sounds a lot of like similar to what was going on about 5 or 6 years ago with Linux on the server before it got really big.
Well, unfortunately, there is a difference. The difference is the programmer population that's associated with Linux is very good at solving server-style problems. They're sometimes not so good at solving desktop-style problems because the desktop-style problems involve end users. And this is a difficulty because while in most respects I think the population of programmers that's working on Linux is second to none, we've got this weak spot near end-user interfaces.
And do you see any companies or groups of developers really trying to improve that?
Yes, there are some people trying to improve it. The people at the GNOME project are working hard. The people at the KDE project are working hard. So there are isolated real bright spots. I'm normally a GNOME user, not because I'm religiously attached to it, but just sort of out of habit. The one thing that has almost motivated me to switch to KDE is KMail, which is just beautifully designed. So there are isolated places where we get it right, but in general, this is an area where the open source community still has a ways to go.
So you don't think realistically seeing Linux as a viable alternative on the desktop for general users for at least another 4 or 5 years?
Oh, I didn't say that. it's not going to take 4 or 5 years. I'd be surprised if it happened sooner than 2 years out, though.
Have you had a chance to see, Mepis or Linspire?
No, I haven't. I've heard some good things, some mixed reviews about both of them.
I think they're making improvements in the desktop. It's getting there.
Another real active area seems to be the Ubuntu people seem to be putting a lot of work into that.
Right. What do you think, Eric, the stumbling points that we have, the big issues that we need to address in order to get things more user-friendly? And like, how user-friendly do you think we actually should, you know, try and get things?
Okay, here's a radical goal for you.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a lot of talk about writing documentation.
Right.
A program that requires documentation is a design failure.
Mm-hmm. That's something.
This is something that people in the Macintosh world understand. The goal of a good user interface design is to present one that is so obvious to the user that it doesn't require documentation. If you need documentation, you have failed.
And you're saying that for every application?
That's the goal to shoot for. In some cases, a documentation-less application may not be possible, but never give up on that goal.
Because, like, I'm sitting here trying to think, how could you actually run a program like Inkscape or Blender or GIMP without having some kind of documentation?
Difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, to explain what even that tool even does. You know, what does the scale tool do? People, you say...
I didn't say it was easy. I'm not even guaranteeing that it's possible in every single case. But in general, we should consider a requirement for documentation to be evidence that you've misunderstood the problem.
Okay, well, applying that towards desktop, towards the general Linux desktop experience, then, you know, what is it on a, say... you use GNOME a lot, right? So what is it on general GNOME desktop that really requires, a whole lot of thought or documentation to be able to use?
Well, for me, not a lot, but then I'm not the best test audience for this question because I have too much experience.
I'll tell you what needs a lot. It's wanting to change any preferences in GNOME is really...
I know you mentioned like changing the or modifying the menu or something like that.
Well, that's
right?
in Ubuntu, and the newer versions of GNOME have not included the utility.
But I'm just talking like a general desktop experience, right? Everything is right there. It's not hard to get around. Nautilus is pretty functional.
Nautilus is actually pretty good. I agree with that.
You can change the backgrounds on your desktop without a whole lot of rigmarole. You can add little icons and things for, you know, program launchers. And can I see that as being pretty functional and pretty pretty non-operating system specific? You know what I mean? It's like a general...
Well, I think it comes down to more or less, it's not the person who just wants to use it for web browsing, a little bit of word processing and emailing, and those type of people that chances are, well, that's all they'll ever do, so whatever comes is good enough for them. It's that next level of user that wants to start exploring different applications, installing different applications, getting other types of hardware like scanners, whatever. What they're used to on the Windows side is you go out and you buy this application or you buy this scanner, you plug it in, it comes with software, you put it in, you're good to go. It's not always the same thing on the Linux side.
No, sometimes it's easier.
Sometimes it's a little more difficult.
Sometimes it's easier. Sometimes you just plug it in and you don't even have to install software.
But then again, it's hard, again, just like Eric said, it's hard for us to sit here and say...
Your voices are breaking up really badly.
I'm sorry. I
don't know why, but I can almost not make out what anyone is saying.
Adjust that over there, Alan. Is that a little better?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, what I was saying...
What's producing that effect, anyway?
It's our asterisk box.
Ah.
And it could be we're coming up against a bandwidth limitation. It's possible. We limited... we have a couple different streams going on, our mirrors, so we limited our main mirror to take into account having more bandwidth for the asterisks. Seems to be a bigger hog than Skype was.
Interesting.
We're working on it.
But what I was saying, you know, to Link is I agree with what you said right there. It's really difficult for people who use Linux on a regular basis and are more accustomed to it to actually, you know, put themselves in the place of a general Windows user, quote to speak, and say, hey, this is easy, or this is not easy, or this is where we need work. Now, if there's another podcast out there called the Linux User Show, which has his wife, actually, I don't know if you heard of her, Kelly Penguin, and she comes on once a week or once every other week, and she's learning Linux, learning to use it, and she rates applications, talks about what she thinks is, you know, what's good about them, what's bad about them, and it's interesting to hear her perspective, being a pretty moderate Windows user, I would say, and her perspective of coming over to using the similar type of applications on Linux, particularly through KDE, and what she thinks are the pros and cons. It's an interesting perspective. I found myself at a couple of times like, man, it's not that hard. Read the documentation.
Right. My wife is an attorney, and she tried to do this for the KDE team herself, but she couldn't get them to pay attention. She couldn't get them to actually use the feedback she was sending them, so she gave up.
It sounds really tough, because like I said, even I said to myself, you know, it's ridiculous what she's saying, but then I thought, like, wait a minute, you know, she has a point. Why can't they just, you know, throw a wizard in or make it a little easier or write some better documentation?
Okay, well, here's the devil's advocate point. Why is it and why should it even be necessary to take, because really a computer is a tool, all right? Why should it be necessary to dumb down the tool so much that you don't need to learn how to properly use it?
Because software exists to serve human beings.
So do sledgehammers, and so do automobiles.
Yeah.
And if you're driving an automobile, you're required by law to know how to use it first. Not saying that, you know, you should be required by law to learn how to operate a computer before you touch it. However, I happen to be a systems administrator, and I actually do think that, but that's a whole different story. You know what I mean? Shouldn't there be some portion of responsibility placed on the user to at least understand some of the technology before taking off with it, you know, to badger everybody across the internet?
You can take that attitude if you like, but if you do, it's likely that no one will ever use your software.
But they do. Oh, and by the way, before, now that you mention software, let me just say to everybody that Eric is the creator of pieces of software. And I bet none of you guys can guess what it is.
Fetchmail.
Yes, it is. Dan's got it right off the bat, man. Fetchmail, brilliant piece
now,
of thing
need,
that I use
do you need
day.
To read the documentation to use Fetchmail?
I did, yes, as a matter of fact.
I'm asking Eric.
Oh, well, yes. And I have two explanations and or excuses for that.
Okay.
One is that Fetchmail is not a tool for end users. It's a tool primarily for people who are system administrators already.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is, at the time I was working on Sendmail actively, I had not yet gotten religion about making interfaces simple for end users.
Well, yeah, but you know what? It's not that difficult to use. I mean, it's...
No, it isn't. And that's the third thing that I should say, was that I really did make it pretty easy to configure.
Yeah, I think it is. And it does, you know, it does that job that it does better than anything else that even tries to do it. So kudos to you, man.
Yay.
That's a good piece of software right there.
But let me tell you one way that this has affected a project that I've been working on recently.
Okay.
That by this I mean I'm really starting to get serious about making interfaces simple for end users. The project I've been working on for it's close to a year now is called GPSD, and it's a monitor daemon for GPS software. What this thing does is it sits in your Linux machine and it monitors serial and USB ports that have GPSs attached to them. And it presents the information, position, velocity, time reports from those GPSs on TCP/IP port 2947 in a simple format. Here's why this is a good idea. First, there are lots of different GPSs out there. They have lots of different reporting protocols. And you don't want applications to have to know vendor-specific or type-specific things about each GPS in order to collect the latitude and longitude. Another good reason is if you have applications reading the serial ports directly, well, then if you have more than one application trying to collect location data, they're going to step on each other. So what this means is that there is a niche in the ecology for something that's basically a sort of user space device driver come service daemon, and its only job is to collect that information and present it again in a clean, simple form. And the way that thinking about the end user affected the design of this project is that I decided early this year that one of my objectives was to eliminate the administrator options. It used to be that GPSD required you to tell it which device the GPS would be on, what the baud rate of the device is, and what its type is. And I looked at this and said, users don't care. Users don't want to think about this. What they want to do is plug in a device, have it automatically recognized, automatically configured, and location information just starts to flow. So I asked myself the question, how can I get rid of all those administrator options and make it auto-configure itself? And that is most of the work that I have put into GPSD in the last 6 months. And we've actually gotten there. The way it works now is you plug in a device, a hot bug script wakes up, says, aha, this looks like a GPS. I better wake up GPSD and notify it that a device just went active. GPSD gets the message, looks at the data stream coming from the port, automatically synchronizes to the correct baud rate, automatically recognizes one of about six different protocols, and then you're in business.
Sounds cool.
That's where you get if you think seriously about simplifying the experience for the end user.
And starts up your information, your little information. I assume there's a graphical display. That's the whole.
There is, there's a test client that's graphical, but the daemon itself isn't the client. All it does is make the information available on port 2947.
Okay.
What your graphical display client does with that is up to you.
Okay, so there's a choice then as to.
Right. It could be used. There's a simple test client called XGPS that's graphical that comes with the GPSD distribution that displays the current time and your position and your altitude and your velocity, blah blah blah. But most of the people who use this daemon are going to be hooking it up to programs like Kismet, which is war driving software, or GPS Drive, which is navigational software. And what those applications want to do is they want to go to that port, get that information, and use it to pan the user through a map of some sort.
Gotcha. Isn't it a little? But isn't it like a little self-defeatist if you make the GPSD is so wonderful and does everything all by itself, and then you have to plug it into like Kismet or something like that? You know what I mean? Which requires an arm length long page of options in order to get running right.
Look, I can only solve one problem at a time, okay?
But, you know, that's I remember back in the day when I used to plug in my scanner and have to configure it by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And now with hot plug, you know,
pops right in, goes pretty
just,
much.
You plug and you go. And a lot of, you know, USB devices are getting to be like that. Mm-hmm. And it's coming a long way.
My whole line of questioning about that was, in order to provide that, like Eric says, the end user experience where they don't have to touch anything, right? They don't have to configure anything, no choices. I mean, we're like you know, switching into almost Apple mode here. Everything has been chosen for you. In order to get that far, don't we have to have a universal desktop? Don't we have to, you know what I mean? Don't we have to make a universal interface kind of thing in order to get things that far where there are no, you know what I mean, where you don't need to present the user with any real options, or you don't have to require them to pass any parameters to anything?
Well, that would be nice, but GPSD doesn't require any particular desktop.
No, I know that, but that's the example of GPSD is like you said, you're writing it primarily to work with another program that doesn't necessarily display like a dumbed down GUI user interface.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm talking like, you know, just the desktop stuff. There's a button on there for you to write an email.
Right.
There's a button for you to, you know, hit the internet kind of thing. And I think in order to do that, we would have to get everything quarantined down to just one, you know, one GUI, one type of user interface.
Which is why Red Hat wrote Blue Curve to make the KDE and the GNOME applications on their system look exactly alike.
Okay.
But do we really need one unified desktop?
No, we don't. I don't want one unified desktop.
Well,
I think it's boring. I think it limits your options as to personalizing
things.
Okay,
I'm going to speak heresy now.
Okay, go ahead.
Boring is good. What's exciting?
For some people, yes, I know. Like my mother and stuff. Like I agree.
Yeah.
There's you know, there are instances, and there's some people who really need to have a boring desktop. But what they really need is not a. I don't think they need a computer. They need an information appliance. You know what I mean?
Every information appliance is a computer in sheep's clothing.
Right.
Why is boring
but
good? Hasn't Apple shown that boring is not good?
Okay. I mean, it's possible to put that too strongly. Mm. Boring is good in the sense that users don't want surprises. They don't want things they have to struggle with. They don't really want to have to think. And it's our job to accommodate that desire.
Good point. I see what you're saying.
Have you had a chance to see Symphony? That looks pretty interesting what those guys are doing.
I'm sorry, that word was too distorted. What was that?
Symphony OS?
Symphony?
Yeah, have you had a chance to see that?
I do not know what you were talking about.
It's a new distro. It's called Symphony. And their approach is pretty different than the standard distros that are out there. I think what they're doing is the desktop is completely HTML, if I'm not mistaken. And the interface is very unique looking. It's unlike anything else I've seen.
You mean the entire desktop is a browser session?
Almost, yeah.
That's interesting.
And it looks very different. Style is completely different. It's still an alpha, I think.
Yeah, but that's not going to attract like newbie users. I mean, it's different. People don't want different. They want boring.
I don't know. I see there are different classes of computer users, and there you know, there's the grandma class, which is you know like you guys say they want the boring thing. They basically they want an information appliance, and that's really what they should have. Someone should come out with a good one, you know, that you could point people to. In fact, they did.
Someone? Do you mean someone other than us?
Well, no. In fact, they did. They came out with a Mac Mini, which is probably about you know.
Because I guarantee you, whoever does that is going to end up controlling 92% of the market.
I don't know.
If you say if what you're saying is somebody should do an information appliance, but it should not be us, you're saying okay, we'll give up 92% of the market.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that somebody should come out with one that brainless users who just want to surf the web and check their email can get cheaply. And use. And like I said, in fact, they did. They came out with the Mac Mini, which will do just that for you for, you know, $500. Go get one and use it. In fact, I recommend that time and time again to people who are looking to do just that, you know, surf their email and go on the web and maybe, you know, look at the pictures off their digital camera or something like that. Gamers... That's another level higher, you know, and you start getting into the gamer type of people, and they want to have more control over their desktop. They want to have more options available, and they want to have things look and feel the way they want to have them look and feel. In order to do that, you can't use the same mentality for them as you can with grandma, where everything's the same.
You're absolutely right.
And then you have power users who are different yet. So.
Yeah. The problem I have when I hear somebody say that there are several classes of users, every time I've heard that, what that's turned into is an excuse for catering to the users who are most like us and ignoring Aunt Tilly.
Okay.
Okay.
I could live with that.
Now, if that's what you decide you want to do, fine. But again, it equates to giving up 90% of the market. And it equates to no success on the desktop.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily that way. Because, like, I get paid to cater to the Aunt Tilly user.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And one of the ways that I actually cater to the Aunt Tilly user is by setting them up with a Linux box instead of a Windows machine or something like that. Because it's a lot less for them to take care of. You know what I mean?
I agree.
And I can do like a dumbed down desktop. Like for instance, I have some users that really are not tech savvy, and what I normally set them up with is Damn Small Linux. Have you tried that yet?
No, but I've heard about it.
All right, I set them up with Damn Small Linux, and I put a couple of icons that do just exactly what they want to do on there, and they can't change anything, and it's really small and really fast.
Uh-huh.
And that seems to work pretty well for that type of user. And see, so I understand where you're coming from, but I think we need to have, you know, somewhere along the line, there has to be an option to let some users have a little bit more control instead of just ballpark making everything, you know, with no options, and you kind of get what.
So I don't think you're wrong, but the original question was, what is it going to take to get mass adoption of Linux on the desktop?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, it's going to take catering to the dumbest users. And I shouldn't even say dumb. I'm saying it's going to take catering to the users who are rationally ignorant.
Lazy.
So...
I was going to argue what you were saying. Like,
go ahead.
I think Eric's got a great point. Is it the ignorant users or the users that have a little bit of knowledge but not the right knowledge?
I said rationally ignorant, and I meant something specific about that. Economists, when they talk about rational ignorance, they're referring to behavior where people could learn more about how to handle a particular problem, but they don't because the benefit that they would get from learning about more about the problem domain is exceeded by the time cost or the effort cost of doing the learning. So there are situations in which you could learn more about something in order to use it better or cope with it better, but it's economically rational to be ignorant. And for most computer users, their ignorance is rational because they're not computer specialists. Their life is not about interacting with a machine, and the amount of time that they would be required to spend to learn even what you or I think of as the most basic chops simply isn't justified. And I've said it in several different ways. I'll say it again. We will get the desktop right when we really grapple with building interfaces that rationally ignorant users can use.
See, I'm still not so sure I agree with that. I don't think that they're, you know, that the rationally ignorant users should be allowed to get away with what they're doing.
But you have a choice. You could say no, the hell with you. And they're not going to want to use your operating system or your software.
Well, no,
that's
yeah,
what they want to use.
I'm not coming from a developer standpoint. I'm coming from a support standpoint. Even rationally ignorant users, just the exact way that Eric explained it, are the people that will not invest the time to learn something because they think in their mind, for some reason that time that they invest is going to, the cost of that time they invest is going to exceed the result that they're going to get out of it.
Right.
And that simply is not the case.
No, okay.
Now,
no,
again,
this is what you have to grapple with. Generally, when computer users make that evaluation, they are correct.
I deal with those people. Do you work in a support environment, Eric?
I have.
I deal with the people every day that do that,
okay.
And they're never correct when they do that.
See, but the problem is...
They lose money for the companies when they
do that. you have a bad case of techie point of view on the world. Most of the support costs I've ever been on, support calls I've ever been on, happened because of a design failure in the software interface. They didn't make it simple enough. Okay? Nobody has to be told how to use a power switch. There's a one, there's a zero, or there's a red dot. People know what to do with a power switch. It doesn't need documentation.
Yeah, but a spreadsheet is a lot more complicated than a power switch.
Absolutely, a spreadsheet is a lot more complicated, which means...
It has to be more complicated. There's no way that you can do a spreadsheet without having some sort of a learning process.
Right.
That's not an intuitive thing.
Okay, so the way to design a spreadsheet, then, is the initial state of the spreadsheet is... And I'm just pulling this out of the air as an example.
Okay.
The way to design a documentation-free spreadsheet is to have the spreadsheet be in an initial state where every gesture that the user might make pops up a balloon prompt saying, this is what's going to happen if you confirm this. Okay? As the user demonstrates knowledge of the interface, they stop being prompted. Okay? As they demonstrate knowledge of the interface, maybe other balloon windows that pop up that say, okay, you've mastered this class of action, now I'll tell you about something else you can do with this gesture.
Yeah, I say that exactly same, those same words a lot when people ask me how to open up their spreadsheet in Excel. Now you can follow this gesture.
Really well-designed user interfaces teach themselves.
I think that's probably true to a point. I don't think that it's possible to do spreadsheets that require mathematic equations, hook up databases and things like that with a stupid user. However, what I do see every day is that exact same thing trying to happen, and I'm not talking just like on Linux. Like I'm talking on Microsoft, where the my whole point was this, right? I work in an office environment, and I have people that really should know how to use their computer.
Right.
Okay, using a computer that don't know how, and they will ask me for support in order to do something stupid like open their email. And I'm really being literal here. You know, like I don't know how to open my email, yet they sit behind a $2,000 computer all day long. And that it galls me because that really is an easy thing to do. But they won't. They're that ignorant user who will not learn how to do that because they think that it's not worth the amount of time it will take them to do that. However, I make more money than them and I have to do it for them. So they're, you know what I mean? They're actually losing money for the company by not learning.
So, is anybody calling you to ask how to click on a mailbox icon twice?
Yes. Yes, I have, and I have people who cannot double click a mouse button. I swear to God, I'm telling you, there are people who cannot double click a mouse button.
So you may be right. It may be that there are some applications where you can't do without documentation. You can't do without training. What I'm telling you is if you fall into the mental habit of saying, well, applications need documentation, they need training, they need support, you'll get lazy.
Sure. Well, I absolutely agree with you. I don't think that every application should need to be that complicated that you cannot figure it out. In fact, I think a lot of them around now are so simple that you should be able to, if you would take the 10 seconds to actually look at the interface.
Right.
But there are some that you really are going to need to read some documentation. And as a computer user, you should be savvy enough to be able to read a help file or something.
So let's go to the question that you guys wanted to examine. I'll say it again.
Okay.
You wanted to know what will it take for Unix to dominate on the desktop. And I'm telling you this is what it will take. It will take Unix programmers as a group, as a whole, becoming this ruthless with themselves about interface complexity and then executing that.
I don't think that'd do it.
Why not?
I don't think that'd do it.
What do you mean it won't do
I don't
it?
Think that'd do it because we don't have the market share and we won't. They're just, it's not going to happen. I think the only way that
but
units
But that's
would,
the way you build the market share.
No, it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not how you, you do not build a market share on aesthetics of anything anymore. You build it on being ruthless and snotty like Microsoft. And what they have done is ensure that every time a computer goes out and lands in anybody's living room, it has their operating system already on it. Doesn't matter how hard it is, how stupid it is, how insecure it is, makes no difference whatsoever. The fact that
so
it's already on there.
So then my next question is, do you want to complain or do you want to beat them?
I want to beat them. I definitely want to beat them. I would love to see Linux do that, but I think Linux. Well, see, that's where we disagree. You think it's all a software thing, and I think it's all a getting the software in the machine thing.
Getting the software
in
the machine.
I don't think it makes a damn bit of difference how complicated the software is. I think it makes a huge difference in as far as accessibility of the operating system, I guess. You know what I mean? If we could get a half and half share with some PC developers and get Linux on half the machines that Microsoft are shipped out with, then things would be way different than they are now.
Well, you know what? Let's look at other countries then. You have Linux adoption going on in other countries.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What's the feedback coming from them?
They like it.
Have you heard the same thing, Eric?
I'm sorry. What was the question?
I said, Link's over here saying it's not so much the user interface as it is the accessibility of pre-installed Linux computers. I say, well, what about other countries where it seems to be making more inroads? And Link says, well, it sounds like they're liking it. They like the interface. They like it. It seems to work pretty well. Have you heard the same thing coming from the other countries that are rolling Linux desktops out?
I don't have enough data to say. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay. Conjecture. It's been a long day. Conjecture. Throw in your opinion. What do you think? You're on the tech show. You don't have to have data to back up your opinion. Go for it.
Well, you heard my opinion.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that unless we really get our act together about end user interfaces, mm-hmm. We're not going to make that 90% market share.
Yeah, but have you in the news lately? There have been a lot of second and third world countries who've been adopting Linux on their desktop for, say, like their schools, for right. their government stuff. And all I keep hearing from these types of people from these countries is that they really dig Linux. You know, they really like it. And
yeah, but the thing is,
and I don't hear them complaining about, you know, how shitty the desktop is and how come I don't have K-Write on GNOME or whatever, you know?
The problem is there are very few places in the world where you actually get substantial Linux. You could actually have substantial Linux adaptation by real end users because the infrastructure doesn't exist, the internet doesn't exist, they don't have enough electricity, they don't even have pipes running water in a lot of these places.
Like Brazil.
The adoption.
Germany?
I was just in Brazil. It's interesting that you mentioned that. Adoption of Linux is happening there in a significant way, but it's not really happening at the end user level the way you and I would think about it. Rather, we got a lot of people doing things like building computer learning centers where the users are monitored and mentored fairly continuously. We got corporate adoption of Linux by people who are already relatively computer savvy, like I think Petrobras, the Brazilian oil company, was one of the big case studies.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't have yet is the equivalent of Aunt Tilly.
How about
in Brazil?
Aren't they doing government adoption over there?
Right, but again, government adoption means that that it's being used by people who
the dumbest of the dumb computer users. Yeah.
People who have to use computers as part of their job and are motivated to actually go get some training to do it. Okay.
Really?
This is not the dumbest of the dumb.
Because that's in like stark contrast to anybody in the United States, who is who is absolutely not motivated to get any training on their computers at all and wants that dumb computer user interface if they have to use it to work.
Well, I think when I'm thinking of Aunt Tilly, I'm thinking more of a home user than a business user.
Uh-huh.
And while you may think business users on average corporate desktops are resistant to learning new things, trust me, they are raving neophiles compared to home users.
So then we got another argument, another factor that comes in, not so much as the user interface or the accessibility of Linux on being pre-installed on the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
It's a resistance to change, which is
yeah.
common human nature, which would probably be an answer to the question I was going to ask. If user interface is king in this, how come there hasn't been a mass adoption of Apple? Because their interface is supposedly light years ahead of everybody
light
else.
Light years ahead of, yeah, Microsoft.
According to
well,
the pundits.
We could start with the simple fact that their machines are expensive.
Right, right.
I don't want to pay Apple's prices for their hardware. Somebody living in the Brazilian favelas ain't going to be able to.
Right, but but grandma could afford a Mac Mini or a lower-end iMac there.
Sure, but why should she?
Because the interface is dumb and it's easy to use.
But does she know that in advance?
Probably not.
Watch TV.
She says she sees the Dell commercials. That's what she sees.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so look at it from the point of view of a rationally ignorant user. A lot of them are going to figure, well, this computer thing might not work out, so I better minimize my unrecoverable investment. I better spend as little on the hardware and software as I can. And that kind of thinking locks Apple out of a lot of sales.
I can see that.
I can see that, yep.
That. Expensive.
That's what locks Apple out of my sales, too.
You know, I was seriously thinking about getting a Mac Mini myself.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for games as for as in order to stream videos,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
multimedia on Linux is still pretty sorry.
yeah, unfortunately, as that is, yes, that is true.
Oh, and by the way, that's something else we have to get right.
Right.
Until an end user can install their machine, power it up, and see and hear every video and audio format in existence, we're losing.
We were talking about this very topic on our forum. People were, you know, bouncing ideas around. The two distros that I've seen that come with almost every codec out of the box are Linspire and Mepis.
And that includes DVD
You're a
playback
Mepis
too,
man.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's great. It's got everything on it.
Okay. So we all know the reasons that the technical and political and intellectual property law reasons why it's difficult to get multimedia to work under Linux. What I'm here to tell you is that the end user doesn't care.
Yeah. They're, we've had this discussion before. Those are not good reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you fix that? How can you fix that? If you have... it comes down to it being a licensing issue.
So I think one kind of sneaky way to fix it is to tune your distribution so that all these codecs can basically be dropped into it, but you don't have to ship them.
Right.
And then let it be generally known, hey, you can download this codec from overseas site foo.
Mm-hmm. Or just have it, you know, do it, if at all possible, have it do it by itself the first time you start it up, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, now, we could look at it that way, and technically that becomes a gray area of whether it's, you know, legal, honest, or whatever,
yeah.
ethical. But, you know, in to do it right, the right way, I mean, is it even possible to do it the right? Because is Windows Media, you know, are they going to release the codecs? Or are they going to charge to be able, you know, is there a license that you can purchase to be able to use the codecs?
Almost certainly. I mean, I can't see Microsoft passing up an opportunity to screw up its competition that way.
Make more money.
So all this means is that somebody's going to have to reverse engineer their codec.
Yeah, but anymore, that's not even really a legally good idea.
Actually, it is. I mean, it's still quite legal to reverse engineer in this country. And even if it isn't...
Yeah, as long as you don't use it, yeah. Look at the DECSS stuff and the DVD stuff. And you know what I mean?
So
that's all reverse engineering codecs, too.
So this just means the development has to take place overseas.
Right.
Like Empire.
Right.
Now, I have spoken to Apple representatives, Apple developers, and I have said to them, why don't you release a version of QuickTime for Linux? And their response to me was, it's all open. You can go build your own version of QuickTime for Linux. And if that was the case, why don't we have a version of QuickTime for Linux? That's, you know, I mean, Empire will play QuickTime files, but you have to download the codecs. And from what I hear, the codec is that's not a license. You know, we don't have a license to use that. Or do we? Because Apple developers specifically told me it's open. You can build it yourself.
Well, this might be something to post to Slashdot or something. Maybe you could get somebody interested in actually writing it. Alas, I am not competent to do this.
Oh, great. I was counting on you to have that done by tomorrow.
Oh, man. Dang.
Well, we shouldn't have posted that on our...
Darn. Come on, you made Fetchmail. Fetchmail's cool. You can do that.
Oh, Fetchmail's a much simpler problem.
Yeah, but how long ago did you write Fetchmail?
I actually didn't write it. I actually inherited the very primitive version of that utility from somebody else.
Okay.
And then
okay.
I completely re-architected it.
So how long ago was that?
That was in... No, mid-1996, I think.
Wow. So that was like 9 years ago.
Yeah.
You have got to be a better programmer than that by now. Which means that you should be able to handle that
There are, in fact, lots of things I am really, really good at, but I'm afraid Codex is not one of them.
Well, it was worth a shot, right?
You know, speaking of Linux on a desktop, Linux on different architectures, and we talked about Apple, and Apple moving to an Intel processor, what do you foresee for the future of PPC and PPC Linux, you know, Linux on PPC? Is that going to start to slip away, or?
Sure looks like it to me, and that sucks because that's a nice architecture.
Yeah, I saw on your website that you use a little bit of Yellow Dog over there, right?
Actually, I have Yellow Dog on a PowerBook that some people gave me years ago, and I don't think I've booted it up in a long time. Because I've got other Linux machines, I actually use the PowerBook to play games on.
So, all right, this kind of gives us a foray into our general questions that we have to ask every guest that's on the show.
Yeah?
And that is... We want to know all about your setup at home, and you know what kinds of Linux you use, what you use on it, what you run on it, window manager, Emacs versus VI, the whole bit. Let us have it. Did we just lose him?
Are you still there?
I think we just lost him.
Did we?
I think so.
No, we're still connected.
Are we still connected?
It says we're still connected.
What happened? We pulled the plug.
I don't know.
We pulled the plug. Call him back.
I don't know. It says we're still connected.
We can't hear him now.
Hey, Eric, if you're there, we can't hear you, so we're going to call you right back.
Yeah, that was a lot. I was like...
It's that long pause that gets you, you know?
I didn't know what to do.
See, and our radio guy, Alan, over here, he could have told us that, you know, he wasn't on there anymore, but no.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed at this time. Please hang up and try.
I wonder if the provider died.
We didn't run
out of minutes. We're sorry. Your call cannot be
completed. That would totally suck.
Did we run out of minutes?
I don't think so.
That's the key right there. I don't
know. We have 100 minutes.
That would completely suck.
There we go.
Hello. Hey, sorry about that. Hey, it sounds like our provider dropped.
Yes, I heard a click and then I heard dead air. Okay, so you were asking me about my home equipment.
Yes.
Okay, so I am sitting in front of my main machine.
Okay.
Which is an AMD 64 box. And its most notable feature is that I have this nice big Mitsubishi 2060U 22-inch monitor.
Ooh.
Nice.
With like 1600 by 1200 DPI resolution.
Yeah.
That's the main machine. I got the laptop sitting next to it. That's my traveling machine. It is an IBM ThinkPad X40. I love ThinkPads. I love them, I love them. And the X40 is the smallest and lightest ThinkPad they make.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's machine is a fairly ordinary Pentium 3 box, nothing real special about that. And we got the little Macintosh portable that I play games on, and we've got another generic white box Intel Linux machine in the basement. They are all at the moment running Fedora Core 3. I'm going to upgrade to Fedora Core 4 shortly, except of course for the Mac portable, which is running Mac OS 9. Let's see, is there anything special or wonderful about this setup? Oh, and there, it's all networked together, fairly standard stuff, gigabit Ethernet, Cat5 cable, and I use a Linksys box as a hub, which also gives me wireless service.
So are you running GNOME on your desktop then, or KDE?
Yes, I am. But as I said, I'm not religiously attached to it. Every once in a while, I think seriously about switching to KDE, and basically I stick with GNOME out of habit.
Because I was checking out your website, and the last screenshot you have was running like FVWM on there. So.
What was that?
I said the last screenshot you had, I think you were running FVWM on your website.
Oh, that was years and years and years ago.
Yeah, so I was kind of wondering if you're still running that or not.
No.
But how about Emacs versus VI? What do you think?
I am all about Emacs.
I knew it.
You're an old GNU guy.
In your face, Link.
Yeah, in my face. I won't hold that against you.
Again. I'm all about Emacs. In fact, I have a lot of code in Emacs Lisp library.
There you go.
If you've ever used the Emacs interface for GDB or run a version control system from inside Emacs, I wrote that code.
Cool. No, I just use it. Like, if I used Emacs, it would just be for a text editor, which is why I just used VI instead.
Yeah. But. I know. If you wanted an operating system, you'd use one.
That's
yeah.
right. I have an operating system. It's called Linux. I don't need to run another one on top of there.
So I like having a Turing complete editor, okay?
Okay.
I routinely, when I do... I'm a lazy person. I don't like writing code by hand when I can get away with generating it with another program.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I do fairly frequently is I actually write procedures in Emacs Lisp to generate C code for me, things like that.
Nifty.
Do you have any speaking engagements coming up in the near future?
Yeah, I do, actually. Next weekend, I'm going to be in Michigan, and I'm going to be giving a talk I don't remember the exact location of the users group. I can find it out if it really matters. The cool part is what I'm going to be doing the week before I do that talk. I'm actually flying out to Michigan on Friday, and I'm going to spend a week at a martial arts intensive training. I'm going to be doing nothing but studying broadsword combat.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to be training in sword combat for a week, and at the end of that week, I'll be giving a talk at the local Linux user group, who were kind. When they heard I wanted to come out to martial arts camp, they were kind enough to offer to fly me out if I would give a talk for them.
Sweet.
Awesome.
That's nice. Which styles of martial arts?
The outfit that's running this is called Aegis Consulting. And they teach a variety of sword styles. Sal, the guy who runs the school, says the central style is what he calls Italian Renaissance broadsword. But actually, the technique looks to me more like it's related to what historians of the sword call a cut-and-thrust sword or a sword rapier, which is not exactly a broadsword. It's a little longer and lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what styles have you trained under?
I have 15 years of hand-to-hand experience. I've trained in Shotokan karate. I have a black belt in taekwondo. I studied Aikido for 4 years. I was very bad at that. I've been training in Wing Chun Kung Fu, which is the South Chinese Kung Fu style, for a little over a year. I'm pretty good at that. I have some experience with Asian sword forms, and I have fought SCA heavy weapons combat, if that's meaningful to any of you.
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah, definitely.
You're into guns, too.
What was that?
You're into guns, correct?
Oh, yes, yes, I'm a pretty good shot.
You're in Pennsylvania. So, you're in Pennsylvania. You got to be into guns.
So I'm a pretty serious martial artist, and this is part of being a pretty serious martial artist, doing this sword training.
That's awesome.
It's not silly, man. That's great stuff, and a fantastic way to keep in shape, too.
We won't fuck with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a challenge, you know, because the good news is, for a guy who's 47 years old, I'm in pretty good shape. The bad news is, I'm 47. So,
you know what? One of the running jokes that I've seen over and over again in the last couple months is people saying, you know, what would happen if you and Richard Stallman got in a grudge match? Who would win? I think you got him beat hands down, man. I'll tell you. Hands down. I'm voting for you. That's all there is to it.
Which weapons are with that?
Either way. I think he'd kick his ass.
Well,
I hope so. Anyway.
I don't want to kick Richard's ass.
But I do. No, I'm just kidding.
That's not nice.
Sometimes he wants to kick my ass, but yeah. The feeling isn't mutual.
But you know what? I've heard you speak twice live. I saw you at Lehigh University a few years ago, and then when you were at the Bucks County Linux Users Group. And I must say, I've really enjoyed your presentations. And if anybody has the opportunity to catch you speaking live, you won't be disappointed. I don't think.
I can tell you a good story about that, actually. I can tell you who I learned to do that from.
Okay.
It was at a World Science Fiction convention back in the late 80s. I think it was around 87, 88. Cliff Stoll had published The Cuckoo's Egg a few years earlier. And he worked up a road show where he would talk about how he tracked these people down. And I was privileged to see his roadshow, again, I think it was about 1987, and Cliff was absolutely freaking astonishing. He was like the funniest, most hyperkinetic stand-up comedian you've ever seen. He was literally running across the tops of tables, you know, playing games with the microphone, doing physical comedy shtick, and yet his presentation was about technical stuff. It was about tracking down security breakers. And I remember watching him and going, I had two reactions. One, this is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And then as I watched him and I started to notice what he was doing, the thought grew in my mind, you know, I think I could do that. I think maybe I could do that. And I started watching what he was doing really closely and analytically. And this was almost exactly 10 years before it became necessary for me to have mad speaking skills. if you like my presentations, sort of send a friendly thought in Cliff Stoll's direction, because it was from him that I learned how to be an effective maniac on stage.
All right.
That's awesome. You know what? What I really hope that you'll consider sometime is stopping by the Lehigh Valley and giving one of those great talks at our lug, actually.
I'm not sure where Easton is relative to me.
You know where Allentown is?
Allentown. Oh, you're near Allentown?
We're in Allentown, yep.
Okay. So that's about an hour north of me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
45 yeah. minutes an hour.
About that.
Up Route 100.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Swing down and pick him up, Link.
Yeah.
We got a meeting on Tuesday.
Okay. Well, we can do that. Yeah.
We'll get you to the airport.
We got a case of Yingling.
Woody.
No,
we can make a video, right? We can make a video of the kidnapping of Eric Rand.
Are you kidding me?
Kick his ass.
Kill us all. That would be a snuff video. We'd be
dead. It'd have to be a heavily armed kidnapping or something, probably.
Hey, just remember who you're messing with.
That's it. Eric, we got to close things up because we're getting cut off of Bin Rev. I want to thank you very much for coming on. Good luck with your talk next week and have a lot of fun at that the training.
You're welcome. Have fun.
Yes, and we thanks again, and we really hope that you know you'll consider coming back and talking with us again. Anytime.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
And that was Eric Raymond.
Yeah. And that was all our time.
Dun, 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 dun. And that was all our time, too, except for, you know, our bonus. Extra bonus materials.
The crap before the show.
Yeah, something, something.
Oh, now I got this time going on. It's the time where I futz around trying to find.
You doing another compile, Dan? Come on.
Closing show.
You know, and holy crap, is it hot in here today.
It is hot.
It is. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Pits. I'm just sitting here, man.
It's got to be like, you know, it's got to be close to like 90 in here.
It's going to be close to like 100 in here, man.
It's pretty damn warm in here.
I mean, you know.
But I brought up Symphony OS. Have you guys had a chance to take a look at Symphony OS?
You know what? I looked at the website for it where they're talking about how they do the new desktop stuff where they have in one corner they have trash can and another corner you go there and another menu kind of pops up. It looks like it's pretty it's a pretty interesting concept.
It's definitely different than anything.
Yeah, and I guess that they have a tune-up so it runs pretty good and it's pretty easy to get software and stuff on it like that too. So I really would like to check that out. And you know what else I wanted to mention? You see, now all you guys that are listening to this OGG file, you get the good stuff. The other guys, you know, they're going to miss
it. It's
going to
be on
this.
The MP3, too, because we didn't close the show yet.
Okay.
Well, listen, the other thing that I wanted to mention, I keep forgetting to say this, is that BSD is coming out with some really wicked stuff now. I don't know how long this stuff is going to last, but, you know, if you're into a BSD Unix at all, you should check it out. NetBSD has a new port called NetBSD Office, I believe it's called. And that is a complete NetBSD install, only it also installs KDE by default and all the Office stuff.
That's like, wrap it up,
that's like PCBSD, right?
Well, no, that's a different one. There's PCBSD, which is FreeBSD, that does a nicer install. And then there's another new one that just came out this week called Desktop BSD. Anyway, check those out if you like BSD, even if you don't. Check them out anyway. They should be really
pretty
cool.
BS done too.
Yeah, BS done too.
I'm going to play these out so I can get off of Bin Rev.
All right.
If you want us to talk more after, you know,
we'll keep
music,
talking.
Please, that's up to you.
We're going to get the bonus material on the OGG file.
Linux Link Tech Show, number one in Nippleburn since June 2005.
Where's my awesome extra?
I'm making it through the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi. You know I'm going to tap that ass, right? You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi. Sushi. Sushi, sushi, sushi.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
It's so musty. Well, gag me with a furball.
The Linux Link Tech Show.
You guys are so worthy, I have nothing to compare you to.
How dare you stand there and criticize? Do you think I don't know what's going on around here? Do you want to make your own choices? Or do you want the state to make those choices for you?
Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Wait for it. Wait for it.
Wait
no,
for
it's
it.
Almost over. It's almost over. Come on. It's almost over. Come on.
I'm waiting. What?
Wait, hold on.
It's over.